Good morning, everyone. And good morning to folks out there in the Zoom realm. I hope you can hear me okay. Yes. Good. Here we are, another morning at Root Creek. The sound of the creek and the trees dancing in the wind that rises up. There must be some daily cycle, because every afternoon that wind just stirs. And this morning, as I was in my cabin doing Doksan, I thought, oh, it's raining. The people out there waiting are going to get wet. But it was the sprinklers. I had a moment of envy arising for the sprinkler system. But it's apropos, since today we're going to talk about water. We've talked about mountains, and now we'll talk about waters, and they certainly go together. As we've said, you know, those two aspects, solidity and fluidity, stability, stillness, and motion, which we all have. We all have the mountains and waters within and around us. Dogen has already given us some clues that mountain nature and water nature are not separate. Mountains can flow. They can walk on water. Michael told us. And now Dogen gives us more about the paradoxical nature of water. Water is a really remarkable substance. Dogen says, water is neither strong nor weak, neither wet nor dry, neither moving nor still, neither cold nor hot, neither being nor non-being, neither delusion nor enlightenment. Frozen, it is harder than a diamond. Who could break it? Melted, it is softer than milk. Who could break it? So he's not saying unequivocally that water is none of those things, but rather that water is not only this or that, just like us, just like life. And of course, he's not only talking about water, but about Dharma, about the nature of existence, our lives, and all their complexity and contradictions. There's a beautiful passage in the Lotus Sutra about Dharma rain. Some of you may remember from some years back, practice period when we studied the Lotus Sutra. Dogen would have known and loved the Lotus Sutra. There are many references to the Lotus Sutra in his work. And in this passage, the Buddha tells his disciples, throughout many worlds of the galaxy, the natural landscape gives life to all sorts of trees and bushes and medicinal herbs. There are many species with various names and forms. In these worlds, the clouds spread over the sky and send down timely rain, which waters everything. All the plants receive water according to their size, no matter whether their roots and stems and branches and leaves are large, medium, or small. They all receive the same rain, but they live and grow and put forth flowers and fruits according to the nature of their species. Though the same earth gives them life and the same rain waters them, they are all different from one another. Just like us and other beings. In the Lotus Sutra, the Buddha goes on to explain that the teachings, the Dharma rain, falls on everything, on every one of us, but is taken in according to the capacity and conditions of each being. Some of us are hard-packed soil pounded down by life. Some have the good fortune of deep, rich soil. We could say good fortune, but then think about the desert or alpine plants and flowers. What strange forms and exquisite beauty. Their toughness and resilience growing under extreme conditions. think twice and give dignity to each being, each creature, given their form and conditions. And remember that conditions can change, sometimes very slowly, sometimes quickly, sometimes too fast. And our lives, too, can adapt, evolve, grow in capacity to live in the midst of a very difficult world with room for wonder and joy. This practice, our practice, helps us to cultivate the soil, to make space, you know, like have to like the aerate the soil, to create the conditionings to receive the Dharma rain, the conditions for awakening, to open our hearts and minds and the very pores of our skin to the Dharma rain. I don't know about you, but water has been much in my awareness in recent years. I don't know, how many people here have gardens? Yeah, quite a few. So you think about rain. You don't just think about it, you worry about it. Michael and I have a large veggie garden and somewhat neglected flower beds. And our well is not deep, so we collect rainwater in barrels at the downspouts of our house. And some years ago, after a very dry summer, we actually bought a 500-gallon tank to supplement the rain barrels. And last year, we worried that that would run dry because we had a very long, chilly, wet spring. And for a very long time, for weeks, the garden plants looked quite sad in the chilly, wet weather. And then it turned suddenly very hot and the poor little veggies got sunburnt. The challenge then was giving them enough water. And that turn came exactly during Sesshin last year. Some of you may recall. So last year I kept a kind of poetry journal from the spring through the fall that it wasn't intentional, but what I realized is it was tracking the surplus and lack of water along with my own body, mind, and heart. So I thought I would share some excerpts with you as a kind of illustration of the way that we are connected to and influenced by those changes in our world and in the water. My mom will appear in these poems. You won't see her because I didn't either, because she had already died. Each month in this sequence began with an excerpt from a weather report, like this one from May 5th of last year, which was the anniversary of my mom's death. Today's weather is expected to be soggy, according to Environment and Climate Change Canada. Overnight, there's more rain expected, wind and a low of 7 centigrade. On Friday, expect mainly cloudy skies with a slight chance of showers. Looking ahead to the weekend, it could be a wet one. Vancouver Sun. And then this poem. 2 years ago, my mother died in her lockdown nursing home room, a continent away. That morning, I walked in the Pacific forest among red cedars, hemlocks, and firs, trail lined with white trillium. Brown creepers fluted their treetop spring-only song. It was as if she who taught me the wildflowers and birds was just over my shoulder, naming them in delight. This year, rain so relentless by the time I retrace those steps, the trillium were tattered and she was gone. And then comes this one. I arrange pebbles from Atlantic and Pacific beaches in a shallow stoneware bowl to Place it on my desk beside a photo of my mother and me, last visit before the pandemic tsunami swept her away. I pour in water until the pebbles are covered, as she loved to do. Add a bleached sand dollar from a Vancouver Island beach we walked together years ago. It sponges up water, chalky white, turns to gray. Five-petaled flower on its dorsal side rises in relief. Alluvial cracks on its ventral side deepen to black. How can colorless water change white to gray? Darken beach sand, mark the high tide line. Bring life to the blacks, ochres, and greens, speckles and bands of these pebbles. Reflect the full moon in a raindrop. That was May. Then came June, still cold and wet. Dark gray clouds open and close, fresh snow on Golden Ears Mountain. Rain squalls in curtains to the east, sun slants through from the west. Beside the dike path, two broken eggs, dull gray green, half the size of a large chicken's egg. Did a raccoon pull them from a bufflehead duck's nest in a hollow of a cottonwood tree? Mid-July, when the heat finally came, these are three haiku sesshin. Sesshin haiku. No rain this year, no dewdrops. Spider webs on blueberry bushes gleam in morning sunlight. On the path to the Zendo, red huckleberries translucent in the setting sun. 22 brave bodhisattvas sit zazen in the summer heat, still masked and distanced. Remember? Weather report from August. August 2022 was the hottest August ever recorded in BC. In the past 6 weeks, Vancouver International Airport recorded only 3.6 millimeters of rain, when typically an average of 36.7 millimeters would fall. The warmer weather and lack of precipitation could affect fishing and salmon spawning migration. The ministry said there have already been reports of fish mortalities and strandings over the past month. I'd forgotten how much I love swimming in lakes, quiet out beyond the beach crowds. Like a child resisting the bath, once in, I don't want to get out. Like the poet's child who said, "Mama, the water held me." Peaceful in the water's cool embrace. It said one of the best things you can do for lubricating aging joints and preventing migraine is to stay hydrated. My mother never drank enough, though her knees and hips never needed replacement, and she lived to be 96. This dry month, I tried to drink a lot and only took 4 migraine pills. It said, tears of cleansing are pure salt water, and tears of anguish are full of toxins. How could I have wept enough for these pandemic years? September, driest on record in BC. Steelhead Falls sings a different song now. Trickly and delicate, these dry September days. Big brown caterpillars are shredding my drought-stressed leeks. But look, the small caterpillars are jade green. Virtuous earthworms, I learn, are an alien species, damaging to organisms in wild forest soil. Did you know that? Red cedar branch tips turn to rust. Dragonflies flit over this golden garden. Immune system still strong. What kind of elder am I on this stolen, beloved land? Drought wears on. North Shore Mountains hazed over, exhaust rises from the city. Smoke from October fires drifts north across the border. No rain for weeks. Tomatoes, sweet and juicy, still ripening on the vine. Our little pond reduced to mud, first time in 18 years. In my dreams, I rescue the drowning. In the day, I go to local waterfalls. Always look for dippers, drab brown birds. They hop from stone to stone, dive into pools and rapids, bob back up. Drought's end. On a stormy late October morning, I walk along the trail where Kanaka Creek pours into the Fraser River. Swollen now after 3 days rain, only 2 weeks ago, the lowest I'd ever seen it. Now massive cottonwoods thrash in the wind, leaves not yet turned to gold. Are their branches so brittle? Will there be time to dodge between snap and skull crack? Big leaf maples have curled, browned, dropped already. Only brightness, the red osier dogwoods lining the trail in deep magenta. I pick a leaf from the ground, suddenly remember it's my mother's birthday. She'd have been 99. She always said she was not aiming for 100. I last saw her for her 96. Gathered the fall leaves she loved, tangerine, lemon, scarlet, collaged them onto a card, taped it to her wall beside the ones from the two previous years, all disposed of in the COVID room cleanup. I wish I could read what I wrote on those cards. Perhaps it was to my mother, who loves trees with or without their leaves in all seasons on your birthday. So I hope this little sequence, this excerpt, documenting my own responses to water and lack of it through the seasons, gives you some sense of how layered and evocative our relationship to water and the seasons can be, and how the signs and sounds of the turning seasons can connect us to those who have died, our ancestors. Many Indigenous peoples revere and connect to the ancestors in their, through their close connection to the wild, to the more than human world. I didn't even include winter, snow and ice in this sequence. But Dogen mentioned, remember the outset, how hard water can become, hard and slippery. Dogen also talks about not only the characteristics of water, but about the different ways of seeing water. You see water differently if you're an Inuit living in the far north, or a Bedouin living in the desert, or a dweller in one of the world's huge cities. And even then, urban attitudes and uses of water vary with location and culture, right? Anyone who's traveled has observed these differences. So let's listen to Dogen's words again, keeping in mind that he's talking about more than just H2O. He says, we should study the occasion when the water of the 10 directions is seen in the 10 directions. This is not a study only of the time when humans or gods see water. There is a study of water seeing water. Here we go again. Water consciousness, not consciousness. Water practices and verifies water. Hence, there is a study of water telling of water. We must bring to realization the road on which the self encounters the self. We must move back and forth along and spring off from the vital path on which the other studies and fully comprehends the other. Does that make any sense to you? Just yesterday, we heard about mountains studying mountains. Today, Dogen is telling us water studies water. This reminds me, and maybe some of you, of Dogen's first famous words, to study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be actualized by the 10,000 things. When actualized by the 10,000 things, your body and mind, as well as the bodies and minds of others, drop away. I think it helps maybe to remember that the word translated as study here in the Japanese is not the word for academic study. It's a different word, narau, that means to learn a language, not in a classroom, but the way children do, the way little children do, organically learning through listening and mimicking. It's the word for learning a craft, hands-on, with your body, through observation, body and mind together. It's that kind of study. It also has another meaning, which is to become familiar with, to become intimate with. In studying the self in this way, we come to realize directly that we are not the constricted, isolated entity we thought we were. It's that kind of study, through paying attention. And when we do that, the 10,000 things come forward to meet us, and we meet them. So the mountains and waters studying themselves is us, our bodies, our ecosystems, our earth, in connection, in sentience. Notice Dogen also says water practices and verifies water. When I read that, I feel like it's describing our very life force being expressed and realized through continuous practice in connection with everything. Water as mind, water as consciousness. Have you been watching the little pond over there? The light on the pond? How the pond is sometimes really still, and sometimes it's stirred by the wind. What pond dharma are you receiving when you watch the pond? Next, Dogen talks about how water appears differently depending on your point of view. He says, the way of seeing mountains and waters differs according to the type of being that sees them. In seeing water, there are beings who see it as a jeweled necklace. That does not mean, however, that they see a jeweled necklace as water. How then do we see what they consider water? Their jeweled necklace is what we see as water. Sometimes we see water as miraculous flowers, although it does not follow that they use flowers. Some see water as miraculous flowers, though it does not follow that they use flowers as water. Hungry ghosts see water as raging flames or as pus and blood. Remember, the hungry ghosts are those beings in the Tibetan wheel of life. The hungry ghosts are the beings who are in a state of constant craving, great big bellies and little skinny necks. It's the realm of addiction, never satisfied. So he's saying, yeah, that, you know, from that view, water looks different. Dragons and fish see it as a palace or a tower, or as the seven treasures. Others see it as woods and walls, or as the Dharma nature of immaculate liberation, or as the true human body, or as the physical form and mental nature. Humans see this as water. We're rather literal and dull, aren't we? And these different ways of seeing are the conditions which water, under which, these different ways of seeing are the conditions under which water is killed or given life. The way we see is how we kill or give life to ourselves and each other. We humans also kill water or give it life, depending on the way we care for or desecrate our water sources and our waterways. So yeah, by extension, our different ways of seeing are the ways we kill or give life to the world, as you probably have observed. If you observe, you will notice that. So Dogen is reminding us to exercise some humility and realize the limits of how much we can see, how much we can know the mind of another. You know, how often we second guess and make assumptions, and we're quite wrong. As it turns, sometimes we find out how wrong we are. And sometimes in that distorted seeing, we contaminate our relationships. And sometimes we're able to see beneath the surface or hear beyond the words and realize that there are deep roots beneath someone's hurtful speech or actions that have very little to do with our precious sense of ego self. And of course, it's more than the human world. We still have so much to learn about. Dogen says, although humans have deeply understood what is in seas and rivers as water, just what kind of thing dragons, fish, and other beings understand and use as water, we do not yet know. I mean, consider he's writing this 600 years ago, how relevant this is. Do not foolishly assume that all kinds of beings must use as water what we understand as water. Yesterday, Michael reminded us of the limits of our human sense faculties compared to our familiar cats and dogs, let alone compared to whales who hear through water rather than air, who move through water currents rather than wind, who sleep and nurse their young and make love in water. Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't you love to spend a day as a whale just to find out? But watch out. Watch out for humans. And what about the birds who spend so much of their time in the air? If we really considered other beings in their own right, maybe we could care more about their soiling their homes with our waste. Here's what Dogen says again. Given that what different types of beings see is different, we should have some doubts about this. Is it that there are various ways of seeing one object, or is it that we've mistaken various images for one object? At the peak of our concentrated effort on this, we should concentrate still more. Therefore, our practice and verification, our pursuit of the way, must also be not merely one or two kinds, and the ultimate realm must also have 1,000 types and 10,000 kinds. So he's also reminding us there, and he loves to do this, not to get stuck in our views, even our views of the Dharma and of our practice, not to be narrow and doctrinaire, to know that there are many Dharma gates and many ways to practice, always to question, always to look deeper, look wider. And then he goes even further. When those who study Buddhism seek to learn about water, they should not stick to the water of humans. They should go on to study the water of the way of the Buddhas. The water of the Buddhas is the Dharma rain that is showering us all the time, if we are open to receive its nourishment. So let us tend our mountains and waters well, within and without, for the benefit of all beings, for our ancestors, and for generations to come. I'm going to close this talk with a song. The words are by a 20th century Senegalese poet named Birago Diop, and they're set to music probably back in the, it says 1980. That's pretty long ago now, by Isaiah Barnwell, who was a member of the Oh, words are failing me. Beloved, beloved, great group of Black American women a cappella singers, Sweet Honey in the Rock. If you ever heard them at the Vancouver Folk Center, Folk Festival, it dates you, but I was there too. And if you don't know of them, just check out YouTube, Sweet Honey in the Rock. There's a repeated line in this song that goes, listen more often to things than to beings. Hydration. Essential for singers. Goes, listen more often to things than to beings. Okay? I think that what the poet means is listen more. Listen to the more than human world. The beings we confess, you know, we conventionally consider insentient. Those voices that get drowned out by the cacophony of human noise. I think that's what he means when he says, listen more often to things than to beings. So with apologies, I'm going to tweak that line for the purposes of our Sesshin practice. Listen more often to mountains and waters. Listen more often to mountains and waters. 'Tis the ancestor's breath when the fire's voice is heard. 'Tis the ancestor's breath in the voice of the waters. Whoosh. Those who have died have never, never left. The dead are not under the earth. They are in the rustling trees. They are in the groaning woods. They are in the crying grass. They are in the moaning rock. The dead are not under the earth. Listen more often to mountains and waters. Listen more often to mountains and waters. 'Tis the ancestor's breath when the fire's voice is heard. 'Tis the ancestor's breath in the voice of the waters. Whoosh. Ah. Whoosh. Ah. Those who have died have never, never left. The dead have a pact with the living. They are in the woman's breast. They are in the wailing child. They are with us in our homes. They are with us in the crowd. The dead have a pact with the living. Sing with me. Listen more often to mountains and waters. Listen more often to mountains and waters. 'Tis the ancestor's breath when the fire's voice is heard. 'Tis the ancestor's breath in the voice of the waters.
And it Dharma talk chant.
May our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them.
Solutions are inexhaustible. I vow to mend them.
I vow to enter them.
Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.
So, seats back, ready to bounce.